Welcome, everyone, to the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks, AFC North lead writer at Bleacher Report and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm here joined by my co-host, Brian.
Hello, Andrea.
How's it going, Brian?
It's, outstanding, I guess.
Well, where there once was 32, there are now but four. Time for the AFC and NFC championship games this weekend.
Popularly known as the best Sunday in football.
Or otherwise the predictable, because these are, you know, the general consensus four teams that everybody saw, you know, back in June, July, going into the final showdowns here before the Super Bowl. We've got, of course, Brady, Manning, what is this, 15?
Something
like that.
Something
with the Denver Broncos hosting the New England Patriots for the AFC Championship game. And then, of course, we've got the NFC West rivalry playing out in a best of three. Seattle Seahawks will be hosting the San Francisco 49ers in the NFC Championship game.
Rubber match.
So it's going to be an interesting weekend of football.
Should be good.
Yeah, before the Pro Bowl next week, and then the Super Bowl the week after that.
I got three of the four right last weekend. I missed on my upset pick by picking the Chargers, and I think that was mainly me searching for something interesting to talk about on
sure.
the weekend. But
sure.
No, I think that it's weird because I think we're always. Or maybe we're used to seeing it. It's happened enough in recent years that somebody weird gets through, as far as like not somebody that was expected at the beginning of the season, and that didn't happen this year.
No surprises.
Somehow,
this year.
When there's no surprises, that's a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could say that. And right now the big championship storylines. Tom Brady's a little under the weather. He missed practice today. He'll be fine for the game.
And oh, no.
Jim Caldwell's wife hates his pleated khakis that he buys for $8 at Walmart.
You mean Jim Harbaugh?
Jim Harbaugh. Is that what I said?
No, you said Jim Caldwell.
Well, we'll get to Jim Caldwell in a minute. But Jim Harbaugh, his wife, hates the $8 pleated khakis he buys at Walgreens.
I saw that photo going around Twitter this afternoon, and all I was thinking is, like, that had to be before that Green Bay game. Because he was wearing like 9 pairs of khakis during the
oh,
game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to talk about the khakis, you might as well get the silly picture from the Green Bay game. I mean, come on. My opinion on khakis is never, ever. So, pleated khakis, never, ever, ever, ever.
If you're going to wear 9 pairs of khakis just to stay warm, you might as well have them be cost effective. So I'm okay with him shopping at Walmart for that.
I suppose there are warmer pants out there. Someone needs to tell.
You can get thermal linings.
There are warmer.
Sure.
There are warmer pants. But we'll get into our conference championship picks in a little bit, because the coaching carousel, it doth continue to spin.
Yes,
we are down to one.
I'm getting dizzy. I don't know about you.
We're down to one head coaching vacancy left. That would be the Cleveland Browns.
That'd be the first vacancy, or no, I guess the Texans.
It's the final vacancy.
Well, I'm saying like it was the first one that opened.
But it wasn't.
Not counting the Texans.
Right.
Because that was earlier. So.
So Jim Caldwell, he is now the Detroit Lions head coach because Ken Whisenhunt got poached, we'll say. Poached by the Tennessee Titans. Mike Zimmer, the former Cincinnati Bengals defensive coordinator, he is the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, as it was expected. Ben McAdoo, who was in the discussions about head coaching jobs, took the offensive coordinator position for the New York Giants, while former Philadelphia Eagles quarterbacks coach Bill Lazor is now the offensive coordinator for the Miami Dolphins. That means, of course, that there is an offensive coordinator opening for the Baltimore Ravens with Jim Caldwell now with the Lions, and the Cincinnati Bengals, much as they did last week when Jay Gruden accepted the head coaching job in Washington, quickly promoted from within former linebackers coach Paul Gunther, who has been with the team since 2005, will take over for Zimmer. Seamless transition for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Should first, be should be first, about as seamless as you can get.
Yeah,
that's
first
for sure.
Hugh Jackson taking over for Gruden, which in many ways can be an upgrade. And Gunther, who's been there 3 years longer than Zimmer was with the Bengals, I think that'll be pretty seamless defensively. So that again just leaves the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. They're we're getting far into this process here, and I mean, I think you had a pretty popular article yesterday on Bleacher Report about that situation.
It's actually that bad of a job, and it's not. I mean, you think about it; they've got what 10 draft picks to work with this year: 2 in the first, 1 in the second, 2 in the third, 2 in the fourth, and the fifth, sixth, seventh, whatever. They also have 5 Pro Bowlers on their roster. They have a nice roster mix. You know, you've got some veterans, you've got some young guys. You know, obviously, you know, it's looking like Ray Horton and Norv Turner are going to move on and be coordinators elsewhere.
Yeah, I saw the Titans were looking at bringing in Ray Horton.
Yeah, the Titans are looking at Ray Horton. Somebody's looking at Norv.
The Ravens?
The Ravens, I think, are going to be looking at Norv. They're bringing in Kyle Shanahan. There's a few places that where Norv could land as well.
That'd be interesting because I believe Norv's quote-unquote style of quarterback or type of quarterback is like that, you know,
Joe Flacco.
Pocket passer that can sling it, and that's what Flacco does all day long. So
yeah, but they also need somebody who's really committed to the run game.
True.
You know, and they have that position open too right now, running backs coach. So it'll be interesting to see what direction they take there. But back to the Browns, you know, everybody's kind of thinking that this is kind of a toxic situation now. You know, there was Josh McDaniels who pulled out of the running, and then Todd Bowles, the Arizona defensive coordinator, he also begged out of consideration for the job. You know, everybody's thinking, oh, well, that, you know, I guess maybe, you know, the one and done thing with Rob Chudzinski scaring people off. You know, people are just kind of connecting the dots. There's Chudzinski going one and done. There's, you know, these two coaches withdrawing their name from the running. And then there's kind of a polarizing front office in place. Obviously, Michael Lombardi, you know, is not well liked, at least in Cleveland. Joe Banner, you know, he's not all sunshine and rainbows. And of course, Jimmy Haslam, the owner, being investigated by the FBI for fraud with the pilot Flying J. But you know, you just connect the dots and you don't really know what's going on in the organization. You know, I thought that McDaniels was a lock, so you can just take my opinion here for a grain of salt if you want. But I think obviously, you know, they've got their sights set, I don't know if solely on, but on Denver Broncos offensive coordinator Adam Gase. Pretty much right after they fired Chudzinski, they inquired with Gase, about his availability for an interview, and he is declining all interview requests until the Broncos are done with the playoffs, which could be this weekend, and it could be, you know, the first week of February. So basically, I'm saying that the litmus test for exactly what's going on, how toxic the Brown situation truly is, will depend on Adam Gase, and if he, first, A, agrees to interview, and B, if they offer him the job, if he takes it, then he was the guy they had their eye on the whole time. He's the first guy that they contacted, you know, to request an interview with after firing Chudzinski. And if that happens and they got their guy, they got the guy they wanted the whole time, and all of the blah, blah, blah and hand-wringing and all the demise of the Browns is a little bit for nothing.
Yeah. It's all potential. I mean, at the end of the day, you aren't in the room with those guys and
no.
A part of that decision. So
all we can do is speculate.
It's tough to say exactly what's happening. It's like you said, people are just trying to, you know, Mad Lib their way into you know, what's actually going on, and trying to, you know, say, you know, what actually happened, and that's
right.
It's tough to say without actually being there.
And you've got insiders with sources, but then of course you don't know who these sources are and what their agendas are, you know, because when you look back, for example, the Roethlisberger trade rumors that were going around mid-season.
Yeah, those came from a source.
And those came from a source, but who was that source and what was the agenda?
Right.
And so that's the question, you know. Who is the one, for example, saying to Albert Breer or Jason LaCanfora or, you know, whoever, that this situation is radioactive and people don't want in? Who's saying that? We don't know. And we don't know what their motivation for saying it is. So basically we can take things at face value and say, well, they haven't gotten their guy yet.
Yep.
Bang. Or we can just try to read between the lines because we've got nothing else to do until the Browns make their decision whenever that is.
Right.
So, you know, in terms of narrative and media and so on, you go with the latter. But if you want to talk about, you know, a rational situation, which, you know what, this could be a rational situation. I mean, these are smart football guys, you know.
Sure.
You know, Banner, Lombardi, and to a lesser extent Haslam, they're not idiots. They seem like idiots.
At times.
They've gotten some bad PR, you know. Firing a head coach after less than one calendar year on the job is never a good look. But it's not a look that they want to repeat. And, you know, basically what cures the stink is winning. And they want to get the coach that will get them to win this year.
So it remains to be seen.
So it remains to be
who
seen.
Who they actually hire
and whether they win.
They can actually win. And
so at this point, all you can do is just wait. And you can either trust that they have this process under control and they know what they're doing, or you cannot trust that. And that is your option based on the evidence that you're seeing. But we're not seeing all the evidence. We have no idea.
Right. But the media can't wait.
No, you can't wait. You have to have something to talk
the
about.
The media's got to talk
you
every day about
something. Yes.
And it definitely, you know, not that we're talking newspaper or anything, actual newspaper, but what sells more papers is, you know, catchy things saying...
What attracts more eyeballs?
Yeah, is you know, saying catchy things like the job's radioactive and all that. That all, you know, even, but that aside, you know, the reports could be true. It could be that they're completely scrambling and they thought they were going to do this and it wasn't well thought out. And now they're kind of scrambling and maybe, you know, but it's like we said, it's impossible to know for sure. So those people can say that, but you have to keep in mind that they're just connecting dots, like you say, and you're saying what you're saying, and that certainly could be true too. You know, it's just it's like you said, they're going to hire somebody at some point.
Yes.
And how planned out that was, or how much of a scramble it was, we won't really ever know.
All I can say though is that I can guarantee you they will not announce who their new head coach is, not make the hire until after they can talk to Adam Gase. The Browns have kind of made that clear. So we're not going to get that answer until, you know, Denver's done. So either this week or after the Super Bowl. You know, they are still conducting interviews. They're interviewing Bills defensive coordinator Mike Pettine coming up here in the next couple of days.
Interesting.
You know, I think that they're looking on the defensive side of the ball, obviously, because they could lose Ray Horton. But I think that they ultimately want an offensive-minded head coach. You know, and I think that they fully expect Gase to agree to the interview, and we'll see where it goes from there. But yeah, I mean, sorry, Browns fans, though, I think you're going to have to wait until whenever it is the Broncos are done for the Browns to make any decision about anybody.
Yeah, it's an unsettling situation for the fans.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I mean, it's another plea for patience,
right?
From an organization that has asked for nothing but patience since 1999 and rewarded it with nothing. There were no rewards except for that one Derek Anderson season where they went 10-6 and missed the playoffs. That was it.
No, the only thing they've had to hang their hats on is the hope of next year.
There's always the hope of next year.
And speaking of the hope of next year, I'll lay this out there. I think it's been well documented that I'm a Lions fan first and foremost,
right,
when it comes to the NFL. And I just want to share with our listeners and anybody else that, you know, not that there's anybody else but listeners, but I'm progressing through the stages here. You know,
yeah, the seven stages of Jim Caldwell.
I've been down this road before, you know, with coaching changes in the Lions. I definitely, you know, I'd say that I was probably with the majority of Lions fans or people, even not even Lions fans, but people that were following this coaching vacancy in Detroit, and in saying that I was kind of leaning towards Wisenhunt for who I would have liked to see come in, just for, you know, the success we've seen him have with when he's had good quarterbacks in place and things like that, and he's definitely got a command of the offensive side of the ball, and so, you know, it seemed to make a lot of sense. There was a lot of pieces in place in Detroit. He could come in and steer that offense in a way, and he was he's kind of that right personality to, you know, he's not that I guess out of control situation that Jim Schwartz had going on.
Right.
He's more reserved and seemed like that stricter kind of guy.
At other times, I mean, when you look at his tenure in Arizona, I mean, he was the king of the out of control situation. I mean, he created quarterback chaos.
He created running back chaos, and he created offensive line chaos, and that team stunk on offense when he was there.
He
didn't. That was always the biggest drawback to him. Looking at him on paper was, you know, he's got this history of, I guess, muddled confusion. But there was always within situations where there wasn't a clear cut starter at quarterback, not the number one guy, and so. With that not being the case in Detroit, it seemed like a good fit. And you heard it all over the media, you know, mm-hmm. like the Mike and Mike or whoever, you know, everybody's saying like, oh, that just makes a lot of sense. And then when it was announced that he was going to the Titans, everybody was kind of, oh, I just don't understand it. There's so much going on in Detroit. So, from one perspective, for the Lions or for a Lions fan, it could look like, you know, they swung and missed at Wiz and Hunt and couldn't get their guy, so then they had to go scramble at that point and get whoever they could.
No team scrambles and gets whoever they can at head coach. It's still a process. It's still a calculated search. There are a lot of guys out there, a lot of coordinators they can talk to. Caldwell was basically the first guy that they interviewed, and they came away extraordinarily impressed with him. He spent a few hours breaking down film and plays with Matthew Stafford to glowing reviews. Mm-hmm. The NFC North isn't necessarily the hotbed of offensive innovation. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Caldwell, you know, he likes a good pocket passer and a solid run game, and he's a good quiet leader that everybody respects. He commands respect without barking orders at people. I think that it'll be a good change of pace in Detroit, and the more I think about it, the more I like it. Even though I think if you would have flip-flopped those coaching hires, I would have liked it a little bit more. But
right.
I think Caldwell brings a lot to the table. I think that he'll do a world of good for Matthew Stafford, trying to kind of rein in those mechanics, considering all of the years that he spent with Peyton Manning. Obviously Stafford would be wise to listen to what Caldwell says about quarterback mechanics.
We'll also see who he brings in as the OC and quarterback's coach for that matter. And in an effort to, you know, like you said, hone his mechanics, and continue to develop him into being, the type of quarterback that I think we've seen his potential shows that he could be. So,
right. And of course, there's more to being a head coach than there is to being a coordinator. You're not just a glorified coordinator when you're a head coach. You're a CEO.
Right.
You know, I think Caldwell has what it takes to be a good head coach for the Detroit Lions. And I think Wiz and Hunt is a nice addition for the Tennessee Titans, especially because he wanted a little bit more personnel and roster control, which he is not going to get with that salary cap situation in Detroit. There's a bit more freedom to
right.
play around with the roster in
which
Tennessee.
I definitely think that was part of it for Wiz and Hunt, and I think maybe the
he's got a better deal too,
$1 million more salary.
Well,
and
a longer contract. He has a longer contract.
Yeah, it was
so
just it seems it,
he feels
it makes
better
sense.
About the
it
situation.
Was a better yeah, and that's kind of where I'm saying that the Lions fans can look at this and say, you know, oh, they wanted Wiz and Hunt, and they swung and missed because they didn't offer him a good enough deal or something like that. And potentially that's part of it. I don't know. But at the end of the day, Caldwell's the coach. So as I'm progressing through my stages of this, I think I'm currently in acceptance, and I'm moving towards hope.
When it comes to the Vikings job, I think that Vikings fans should be extraordinarily excited about Mike Zimmer. This is a guy who could and should have been a head coach last year, the year before. He's got all the tools. He just has a kind of a gruff, brash kind of interview style. I don't know if any of y'all are familiar with this past season of Hard Knocks with the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, if you saw him there, you know that he's kind of a taskmaster, and that kind of personality trait comes out in his coaching interviews. But it's nice to see that the Vikings were pretty much beholden. You know, they mm-hmm. they fell in love with him. You know, it's going to be great. He is going to scream and yell, and he's gonna pound the table to fix the quarterback situation and all that. I think that the NFC North in particular should be scared that there's a coach of Zimmer's caliber and demeanor waiting among them right now. This is going to be a dangerous defense that he's going to cobble together with players that you thought were done, players you've never heard of. It's going to be good. The Vikings, I think, have nothing but an incredibly high upside situation here.
Yeah, you know, potentially, I think that I'm on board with this idea that Zimmer's going to be a good coach.
Oh, he's going to be. I'm really on board with it.
From what I saw, you know, watching the Hard Knocks, which obviously is edited and it's just, you know, what they want you to see, but still, you get a look into who the man is and how he is, or how he deals with people and how he deals with the team and all that. And he seems like he's got a lot of qualities you want. He seems like
the guy you'd run through a brick wall for.
And especially if he's like the – I mean, I really like the idea that he's gone around to these other interviews and he's been turned down because he's just a little too straightforward. And I think I would want that out of a coach.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's gone into interviews before and turned off the GM and owner because he'll just be like, you know what? Your linebackers – it's just terrible. They're all terrible.
Here's your issues. You know what I mean?
He'll say things like, they're all terrible.
Right.
You know? And like, what were you trying to do here exactly? I don't know. So, kind of insulting them a little.
I think he's got the tools to be, you know, what they're looking for, or what anybody would look for in a head coach.
Yes.
What concerns me is the situation. And that's the, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it seems like the least attractive opening.
It really did seem like the least attractive opening. And there's a lot of weirdness up there. And it's beyond the fact that you know, the Metrodome's done. They're going to be in TCF Stadium for the next 2 years while the new stadium is being built.
Yeah, that won't bother.
There's this
Zimmer.
Whole transition. I'm saying that's... It's not the most, you know, ideal situation, certainly, but...
But Zimmer's the kind of guy who can ignore that crap.
I think he... Right. I think that's part of it.
It doesn't even matter to him.
And there's definitely some issues with that team as far as personnel, and I think certainly on the defensive side of the ball, which is where, you know, he excels. So, you know, it's like you said, I think he can probably do a lot to turn the current roster around and get more out of those guys. Maybe we'll see something like that, but... they definitely still need to add new guys to that.
They need to tweak
the
offense too. I mean, I don't think they really have a solution at quarterback right now.
They
Matt Castle outperformed Christian Ponder this year, but I don't consider Matt Castle a solution.
He's the best of the bunch up there, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's who you want.
Right.
So
exactly.
I think that actually I was having a discussion about this with a Vikings fan today, and you know their preference was to. You know, keep Castle in place, but then obviously bring in a young guy in the draft or whatever, and try and develop somebody. And it's kind of like Castle's okay for now. You know, don't necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater.
But he's not your franchise quarterback.
But obviously, he's not who you want to build your team around.
Right.
So, but I think right there is where the biggest concern is for me. And it's like. I've got my concerns with the leadership of that team, and this whole the whole you know, it almost felt like, and I'm not saying I know what their draft board was when they drafted Ponder, but it seemed almost like they were taking a leap to get him, and that they were just like we need to get a quarterback, so let me get this guy
right,
he's
because all these
now.
Crazy quarterbacks were going in the first round that year, like these guys who haven't panned out.
Right, exactly. And so it's kind of like they got caught up in that scurry to just get a quarterback, and then beyond that they brought in Castle. I think he clearly did a better job than Ponder throughout the entirety of what he did there. But then they scrambled in the middle of the season, went and spent a bunch of money to bring in Josh Freeman for like half a game, and then he's nowhere to be found again after that. Not that I think that they should have kept playing him. It's just
weird.
Those sorts of decisions.
Yeah, that was a weird decision.
Right,
that was a weird decision.
It just makes me question who's running things over there and how they make decisions, you know?
Yeah.
And could that get Zimmer into trouble because he's now dealing with those people as his boss, basically. And those people are – I mean, I don't know how much freedom he's got with personnel decisions. I don't know how much input he – I'm assuming –
As much as he wants.
I'm assuming he's got a good amount, or they're going to at least take his opinion into consideration.
Right.
But, you know, it's hard to say – where he might be limited there, and he'll have to rely on them to make the correct decision. And I don't know, you know.
Right.
So it's really the situation that concerned. I think he is a pretty good hire, but just that situation. I'm not convinced it's going to work out, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess that kind of covers the coaching situation right now. Obviously, we'll touch base on it again next week. We'll have some coordinator positions.
We didn't give a lot of loves to the Titans, but I think that's a weird situation for Wisenhunt to get in.
It's a weird situation for Wisenhunt because Jake Locker isn't typically his type of quarterback, but he seems to be excited about the challenge of Jake Locker. You know, they're probably not going to pick up his 2015 option this offseason. They have to do it this offseason. But that doesn't mean that he's not going to stick around. I think this is an important prove it year for Jake Locker, and it's going to be interesting to see if there's any noticeable growth under Wisenhunt, which I think there could and should be. I mean, Roethlisberger kind of grew a little bit. I mean, obviously Arians really brought out the best in him, but Wisenhunt wasn't a bad offensive coordinator for a guy like Ben Roethlisberger. Obviously, they have some decisions. Things are going to change in the run game there. It's pretty much a foregone conclusion. Chris Johnson's done.
Right.
They need to add some weapons at receiver. I mean, they've got some young guys, but then you've got Kenny Britt and you've got Nate Washington.
These guys haven't really worked out,
or like Nate Washington. It's just that he's older and he's mm-hmm. he was never an all-world kind of guy anyway, and then you get a little bit older, and you have two things you can do. You get slow and you lose your job, or you get slow and you get physical.
Right.
So he's got it, you know, that's the thing with Nate Washington.
Yeah, I think the most remarkable thing to say about the Wisenhunt to Tennessee situation is that everything that was pointing towards him being a good fit in Detroit is what's leading or hinting that he's not going to be a good fit in Tennessee, and that's
right.
That he hasn't had a lot of success when there hasn't been a clear-cut starter there, and or that whoever's the de facto starter isn't
doesn't necessarily have job security.
Exactly, and so you know, how is that? Is he going to? He's had a tendency to show impatience with guys that, you know, like I said, aren't solidly entrenched as the starter.
Right.
Such as Leinart or...
Leinart and Kurt Warner and John Skelton and Kevin Cobb and Brian Hoyer and Ryan Lindley.
For the most part, he stuck with Warner once Warner showed that, you know, he still had it and wasn't just old at that
sure.
point. But yeah, like all those other guys, it was just kind of like, you know, he wouldn't stick with anybody, you know, trying to go with Skelton when he was a rookie.
Kevin Cobb.
And I think Max Hall was on that team.
Max Hall, Ryan Lindley,
right, and he was
Brian
just like
kind of
just kept flipping around and because, you know, like I think we can say that Jake Locker is the starter in Tennessee. I mean,
he should be at least for 2014 because they need to know what they do or do not have in him because they have to decide on the future of the quarterback position
right.
based on what happens with him in 2014.
And that's the thing is that, you know, they'll have, I am assuming, still have Fitzpatrick on the team and potentially bring somebody else in. And it's going to remain to be seen how Wisenhunt deals with that. Is he going to get impatient like he did? And is he going to keep flipping guys in and out and try and, you know, just not be satisfied with any of them?
And he hasn't had luck at the running back position either. I mean, you've got Beanie Wells and Ryan Williams and just these guys that he kept cycling through as well. And
granted,
in
they
Arizona.
Weren't the most to work with in the first place, but exactly.
So it's and you know and the run game situation being in such flux right now in Tennessee, and the quarterback position kind of being a little opened up there. It's going to be weird to see it's going to be interesting to see if Wisenhunt can just pick a starter and stay with him.
Right.
And that's going to be the key. And that's like you had said, what made the Lions a better fit because you can't really, fudge the quarterback and you can't fudge the running back situation.
If there's one thing I like about the Lions in general as a team right now, beyond being a fan, I think that they have a good situation going on. It's at quarterback.
Yeah.
It's a young guy who's got the skill, who's proven that he can do, you know, he's had some clutch moments to show that he can do that. He's thrown for 5,000 yards. I mean, there's There's all reason to think that he is the starter, and there's no question in it. And then the backup is, in my mind, one of the most perfect backups you can get in Sean Hill, because that guy has, whenever he's asked to come into the game, he performs solidly, which is all you ever want out of a backup quarterback.
Right.
You don't want anybody that's even better than solid, because then it brings into these quarterback controversy.
Exactly. And this guy's getting paid so much, you want to pay this guy that much to sit on the bench.
Right, and so you avoid all that by having a guy that you can rely on to come in the game and get things done, but maybe not overwhelm and wow everybody, but at least be someone you can rely on to get the job done as your backup, and you don't, you know, there's no question about any of it, though, you know.
Right.
And that's really what's the one of the most solid things about that team right now, I'd say, is that position, and that's one of the things I like the best, certainly. So it's interesting to say the least that he ended up down there in that position with that situation. I get the money. I get the flexibility in the cap and the flexibility with personnel for the whole team because of that. But just from what's there to start with, it just seems like it, you know, might not be the best situation for him based on what we've seen out of him.
Right.
But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there'll be other coaching stuff to talk about in the coming weeks, so we'll get back to that probably next week. We're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and we're going to make our conference championship picks.
Yes.
So stay tuned. And heartache number two was when you come back again. You came back and never meant to stay. We're back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and now it's time to make our conference championship picks.
Playoffs.
It's time for the playoffs. It's the final playoff, in fact, until the championship game. Both games this week are on Sunday. It starts out with the mid-afternoon game, the New England Patriots at the Denver Broncos. I saw something interesting. I thought this was one of the most apt things I've ever heard Ray Lewis say. He said, Peyton Manning's got the numbers. He's got the stats. And Tom Brady, he's got all the stats. And Tom Brady's got all the rings. And it's just so interesting, like, the difference between the two guys. Brady's the championship guy, and Peyton Manning is the guy who, like, just puts up the insane numbers all the time. You know what I mean? I just thought it was a very astute observation.
I think it's definitely there's a lot of merit to that point of view.
It's not saying that one's better than the other. Manning's only got one ring.
But at the same time, Manning has a ring. Tom Brady's got three. So really, he's got two more rings. And I'm not saying that, you know, two more Super Bowls isn't a lot of Super Bowls, but it's two more rings. And Peyton's got gaudy stats, but so does Tom Brady, just not as gaudy. I'm just saying,
right.
they're not as night and day as that almost paints them to be. But yeah, that, I think it's a decent way to sum up the difference between the two. You know, at the end of the day, Peyton Manning is the modern day Dan Marino, except he's got a ring. But that, it's funny because he's got a ring. Dan Marino never got a ring.
We all know this. Yeah.
Dan Marino never got a ring, and he put up a zillion stats, you know,
right.
Just crazy stats.
Right.
Manning's got the ring, and yet people talk about him the same way they did about Dan Marino towards the end of his career. And it's just, you know, it's like, oh, he couldn't win the big games and all this. And it's like, well, he got a ring, you know, but like that one wasn't good enough because he was really good for his entirety of his career.
Well, there are two schools of thought, and you've got the people who quantify quarterback success in rings, and the other people who quantify quarterback success on what they did on the field, wins, the way they played the game. I'm of the latter, you know, opinion, only because to get a ring requires a team effort and is beyond the quarterback. And sometimes, would you call Colin Kaepernick, for example, an elite quarterback, or a quarterback who's in the company, you know, in Tom Brady and Peyton Manning's echelon? No, okay, but he went to the Super Bowl last year, and he might go this year.
He's too young.
Joe Flacco is not in that category, and yet He won a Super Bowl last year and had a really good run in the playoffs to do it. You know, there are non-elite level quarterbacks who win the Super Bowl on a near regular basis. It happens because it's a team sport. So when you want to talk about quarterbacks, you can't even look at wins and losses. Quarterbacks don't win and lose games. Teams do. Quarterbacks don't win and lose Super Bowls. Teams do. You have to look at the numbers, the success, the on-field abilities, the clutch play, the completion percentage, the ability to score touchdowns when you're, you know, down in the red zone instead of kicking field goals. You know, offensive efficiency, the not throwing picks, not making poor decisions, being accurate. Those are things that both Tom Brady and Peyton Manning possess. They are on equal footing to me. I do not care about rings. However, I'm going with the Denver Broncos to win this game because I think that the New England's dearth of passing weapons is going to catch up to them against the Denver Broncos. I think that there is shootout potential here. Both teams are, you know, kind of on defense. But Manning just has more guys he's confident in and comfortable with to throw to than Tom Brady. This game is also in Denver. You know, I think that there's definite home field advantages going on in the playoffs. It's not always, but it happens. I really like Denver in this game. I don't think that Peyton Manning is going to choke with some weird fourth quarter interception. I think that Tom Brady is going to play a really good game. It's just not going to be enough. I am going with the Denver Broncos.
All right. I have to say that, you know, and honestly, I'll be straightforward with everybody here. I haven't even really thought about this at all until about the last couple minutes when we started talking about
okay.
this.
That's promising, people.
No, I'm saying I'm not sitting here honing some opinion to spew at everybody. I'm just really going, you know, I'm just telling you what's coming to mind right now. And I'm going to go ahead and pick the Broncos here. And it really, more than anything, just has to do with what I saw last week. That the defense for the Broncos played so much better than I even expected.
Absolutely.
Them to, because
especially with what Philip Rivers and that
San
Diego
offense
has been doing.
We had seen this Chargers offense just tearing it up lately, and they got owned the at least the first half of that game. And I don't know if that was
first three quarters of that game. They didn't score a point until the
quarters,
beginning of the
yeah,
fourth quarter.
You're right, the three quarters of the game, that is quite an accomplishment. I think maybe the home field advantage had something to do with that. Great, but they're still going to be at home this week. You know, the Patriots maybe they do their thing. They're every bit maybe not quite as good as the Chargers were down the stretch.
And the Patriots, you know,
offense.
They run the ball well, so they have tools to keep Peyton Manning off the field that don't necessarily even involve their defense, you know?
Right, and maybe the Chargers got away from that a little bit last week just because they got themselves in a hole early. I don't know. I think when it comes down to it, the way I saw that Broncos team play, I thought that was going to be the scariest moment for them. With the bye, playing that Charger team that kind of looked scary. They had been playing really well on all sides of the ball.
They looked very good against the Bengals in Cincinnati the previous week.
Exactly. And the Broncos, you know, really stepped up. And again, the Chargers did their thing to come back and, you know, fight and scrap and get back in the game and at least make it worth watching. I think it ended up being the closest of the games. If not, it was right there with – yeah, because I think the – Saints Seattle was an 8-point game, so it ended up being the best game,
oh,
if
geez,
you will.
Marcus Colston.
but it still felt like the Broncos dominated that game.
Yeah.
Even though they had to survive that Chargers late push, so it just that sort of team effort. You know, maybe everybody's just really buying in. I think that we're really at the end of Peyton's career here. This is probably going to be his best chance to win another ring. And maybe he's got everybody on board with him. Because, you know, he's always been prepared to win the ring every year.
Oh, absolutely.
But
there's nobody
like
more
said,
prepared to win the ring every year.
It's a team sport.
It's a team sport. And not everybody's executing.
It can't be more illustrated by the fact that Peyton Manning's only won one ring. I mean, everybody that you can find that knows Peyton Manning a little more, certainly more than we do, will say that he is, you know, the most prepared guy. He's a tireless worker. Nobody works harder than him. Blah 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 blah. And but it's like you said, it's the team effort is what puts you over the edge to win the rings. And it's really how can he get his team to come with him. And I think the effort we saw last week, I think, you know, the Patriots obviously are a solid team. I think they did more than a lot of people even expected them to this year, even though they were right there at the two seed and whatnot. But, like, they're certainly
part I think way there was a level of overachievement for the Patriots this year.
Part
I think
way through
so.
The season?
Just because of the...
Yeah, there was a lot of questions.
You know, they lost
maybe,
all their receivers,
maybe,
basically.
Yeah, 4 or 5 weeks into the season, 6 weeks into the season, you know, there was some question whether they were going to be right there I don't think anybody would have necessarily picked them as the two seed at that time. So, you know, they did great to get to where they are. They're definitely a solid team. They got a lot going for them, but I think when it comes down to it on Sunday, the Broncos are going to get this done because Peyton's obviously going to do his thing, but I think he's got enough of the rest of the team with him in this unified effort to get to that goal.
All right, so that's two for Denver. Sunday night we've got the second of the two championship games. This one for the NFC. It is the San Francisco 49ers at the Seattle Seahawks for the third time this year. I can guarantee you one thing. They're going to be hitting hard in this one. They're going to be hitting hard.
This is going to be a good one.
This is
going to
be a good one. I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks. You know, they twice broke the Guinness Book of World Records stadium decibel noise thing this year. This is going to be louder, and it's going to be sustained. You know, I think that's going to really mess up the San Francisco 49ers. I think that they're going to go all in on stopping the run and trying to make Kaepernick throw. And they're going to try to make Kaepernick throw while disrupting his ability to get the snap. I think it's a hard situation for the 49ers. Obviously, it's one they're familiar with. Obviously, they were in the NFC Championship game last year, which does give them at least some semblance of an advantage. They've been here before. They don't have to – they won't be so wound up. It's not nervous. It's not unfamiliar. But it's on the road, and it's in Seattle. You know, and Seattle's only lost one game in Seattle over the past two seasons. I'm going Seahawks here. I think that they have all the parts to win this game, and so do the 49ers.
Right.
So do the 49ers. I just think that Seattle is going to be able to grasp this moment because it's in Seattle in this incredible environment. The moment is tipped in their favor.
You know what's funny is how close was it last week? You know, Colston running loose, almost running out of bounds with some time left.
Well, there would have been time
for
one more.
They're only down one score.
Well, they would have to get the playoff, get a touchdown, and then
I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm not saying it wasn't
a 2-point conversion to tie.
I'm not saying it wasn't a daunting task.
So,
but I'm just saying it felt really close.
But that would have sent it into overtime, theoretically. So it's still not.
I'm not saying it was for the win. I'm just saying, it at the end of the game when it came down to it, it felt really close.
Right, but that's Drew Brees.
And I think also part of that was that we wanted to feel close because we wanted a better game. But, there's potentially a crack there. I don't know.
Well, Russell Wilson hasn't been playing very well recently, and whether or not there are two schools of thought on the matter. One is that defenses have finally figured him out and figured out the way that he passes and his rhythms, or he's secretly hurt and we don't know. But Russell Wilson hasn't really been looking like himself lately, while Colin Kaepernick has been kind of on fire. So that is worth noting. You know, both these teams have dominant run games, however, you know, and we might not see a lot of passing. I don't know. I just think it all tips Seattle's favor. It's just overwhelming to me.
I think you look at these two teams and this is one of the hardest games that we've had to pick all year. I mean, both these teams are just as solid as you can be. I'm not even going to call them similar quarterbacks. They both have young quarterbacks, but they both have lots of weapons around them, and they both have just insanely good defenses on the other side of the ball. And I can't remember the last time I looked forward to an NFC championship as much as this one.
Oh, this is going to be fabulous.
It's going to be an outstanding
game. And it's what
we all
expected and we all wanted, you know, since well before the season began, and we're getting it. So
exactly.
We get Manning Brady 15 or 16 or whatever this is, and then we get We get the NFC West, you know, stomping.
So when it comes down to it, I have to pick something. I'm going to pick one that there's going to be an outstanding game that we all get to enjoy.
Yawn.
But to pick a winner, I think it's really splitting hairs. I don't really have a good reason to pick either of these teams, other than the fact that maybe because Seattle's at home. But I don't know how much that comes into factor at this situation in the playoffs. It's really about who's the better team on that day. It's not even so much where you play. That being said, I'm going to pick the Niners just to be different from you. Because
okay.
I really don't have much of a reason to pick, you know, either of these teams. I like them both. I think that either of them could win this game, obviously. And so I got to pick something. I'm going to pick the Niners just so that way we're not both sitting here with the same Super Bowl.
Okay. Well, that's our
picks. As terrible as that is for a reason.
Well, those are our picks for the conference championship games. So I hope you enjoy them. We got one more pick left.
One more.
And it's not for the Pro Bowl next week, let me tell you, which Deion Sanders
claims. Oh, we're not picking the Pro Bowl?
No. Which Deion Sanders claims he's playing in, so forget it.
Oh, boy.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to end this show mercifully for all you listeners who are being tortured by the sounds of our voices.
I don't think this is That's the day my world will end.
And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. And before we let you all go, it's time for a reading from the Book of Bradshaw.
As is customary.
The book, of course, is It's Only a Game. It's the memoir written by Terry Bradshaw, who played some football once.
Once upon a time.
Yes. Football is a violent game. If you play football, you're going to get hit. You're going to get tackled or blocked, beaten, smashed, pounded, poked, pounced on, clobbered, clouted, jabbed, smacked, swatted, or slugged. You're going to get whomped, whacked, punched, hammered, creamed, slammed, battered, pummeled, whooped, kicked, banged, and butted. You're going to get bruised, cut, scraped, scratched, and wounded. And then you've got to go back in the huddle and run the next play. One question I have been asked many times by people who have watched me get hit during a game is, did it hurt? The answer is, well, of course it hurt. What kind of question is that? You don't get hit by 270 pounds of muscles without it hurting. Even in a ball game in which every player walks off the field at the end, people are going to be very sore. People are going to be hurt. You get rug burns from the artificial surface, bone bruises, welts, bumps, sore ribs. The offensive lineman's hands are cut and battered. The defensive lineman's hands are cut and their knees are ripped up. It's brutal. Absolutely brutal. And a great deal of fun, assuming you are able to walk off the field. There are people who claim that the hitting in pro football isn't as rough as it appears to fans. The people who make this claim are definitely not pro football players. Players are able to successfully survive this level of contact because they have grown up with it. When I began playing football, I didn't like the contact, which is saying, I like everything about parachuting except the height, until I got involved in a few plays. Then I found out it didn't hurt too much when I got hit, and I got praised for hitting other people. This was my kind of game.
Once again, sage wisdom from the master of that which is apparent.
Yes. Terry Bradshaw can explain exactly the situation you're looking at just as well as probably anybody but Randy Orton. All right. So with that concludes this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrea Hengst. I am the AFC North lead writer at Bleacher Report and a pro football-focused fantasy football contributor. You can read my work if you go to bleacherreport.com, search my name, just search it on the Google machine. You'll find me. You can find me at profootballfocus.com, writing about fantasy football. Right now, you can find all my content for free because Pro Football Focus Fantasy Gold is free during the non-fantasy offseason, which we are in right now. You can also find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea. Sometimes I'm on the radio, but I don't know.
That's
I'll give you the heads up, okay?
Sporadic.
Yes.
And certainly not consistent by any stretch.
No, my regular gig is over now that the season's over.
That's right. It'll be back. I'm certain of this.
I'm certain of it, too. It was fun.
And once again, I'm Brian, and you can find me on this here podcast, as well as occasionally in and out of the Daily Center. And I'm also at Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right. Well, that about does it for this week's F-Ball NFL podcast. Everybody, enjoy the conference championship games. Try not to worry about who the Browns are going to hire as their head coach. Just don't worry too much. And we'll be back next week to further fan the flames of, oh, the Browns are going to hire this joker, aren't they? Okay. So, you know, again, enjoy the games and thanks for listening. And we'll be back with you next week here on the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Take her easy.
Peace. Yes, I've got heartaches by the numbers.